Syrians aren't the only ones in Donald Trump's sights. He's spoken of prosecuting Hillary Clinton, registering Muslims in the U.S., even installing family members in key government posts. Trump says he's backed away from some of these notions, but still a word does spring to mind, autocracy. Author Masha Gessen knows a thing or two about navigating autocratic leaders. She was born in Moscow and worked as a journalist there, even managed to be a vocal critic of Vladimir Putin. Gessen now lives in New York.
There's a great temptation, and I think that temptation comes from the limits of our imagination. And the temptation is to believe that he's not as bad as all that, that he didn't mean half of what he said, and that it's just going to be politics as usual, maybe a little bit different. In my experience, in writing about Vladimir Putin, he laid out pretty much what he thought and what he wanted in his early interviews when he was still acting president, and even before that, on the rare occasions when he had a chance to express his opinion publicly. Nobody wanted to listen. People wanted to project their ideas of what he ought to be. I think that's very much what's happening with Trump now. Some people are sort of noting that, oh, well, maybe, you know, he doesn't want to build an entire wall along the Mexican border out of brick and mortar. Maybe some of it will be chicken wire. What a relief. But he hasn't stepped back from sort of the main themes of his campaign, and that's no accident. He is who he is. He ran for autocrat, and he won.
I mean, candidates are bound to talk hyperbole on the campaign trail, and now I know you believe that we should believe what he says, but he keeps contradicting himself. So what are we really to believe?
Actually, I would question the premise that candidates are bound to talk hyperbole. There was a wonderful piece in The New Yorker a couple of months ago by Evan Osnes, who I think went into reporting the piece also believing that candidates usually talk in hyperbole, and discovered to his surprise that roughly 70% of what candidates promise during the campaign is actually carried out during the presidency, which seems like a very high percentage. And his hypothesis, and I think he's right, is that there's a force that these promises acquire during the campaign that sort of becomes a force of its own.
I mean, I know there's been a lot made of Donald Trump's praise for Vladimir Putin, but aren't they very different animals at the end of the day?
They're different. I don't think they're very different. Putin, unlike Trump, is not a charismatic leader. He became charismatic sort of by virtue of sitting in the magic chair. Trump has a force of personality. But I think that their key similarity is their approach to power and their understanding of power. First of all, they see power as a source of enrichment. They also see power as a source of personal affirmation. I think they also equate power with domination. Putin has built what the Hungarian political scientist Balint Magyar calls a mafia state. And it's funny, you know, when I was reading Magyar's work over the last couple of years, and he uses the image of the family to explain how a mafia state works. And now we see Donald Trump come in, and now it's a literal family. You don't even have to have sort of the metaphor of the family, because Donald Trump is bringing his literal family into running the country very gangster style.
You left a Russia that was getting increasingly authoritarian. Just remind us why you uprooted your family and how you see that decision now as we enter this Trump presidency.
I had to leave Russia because the state threatened to take away my children, because my partner and I are both women. I had faced personal threats before, but I wasn't really able to tolerate threats against my children, so we basically packed up and left. I thought it was a great decision. I now feel very strange about seeing some of the same traits rear up in American society. I feel like I sort of betrayed my kids. I told them this was the beacon of normalcy, this country, and now we're looking at the same stuff here.
So what do you suggest to champions of democracy do at this point?
You know, the Yale historian Timothy Snyder, who's been studying 20th century Europe for many years, wrote this wonderful phrase that Americans are no wiser than the Europeans, or the Germans specifically, who saw their democracy turn into a tyranny. But the difference is that we know what came before. We do have the value of knowledge collected over the years, and I think that the one mistake that countries tend to make, and it's an understandable mistake, which is to take too long to start resisting. I'm really hopeful about the number of protests that I've seen and the very decisive statements that people have made, including New York Mayor Bill de Blasio, who gave a terrific talk the other night about how New York City is going to continue to be New York City and was very, very specific about setting down the line and saying, if there's a Muslim registry, we're not going to cooperate. If we're told to use our police to round up people for deportations, we're not going to cooperate. That's our beacon of hope. Politicians and activists and journalists who set down the current normal before a new normal can overtake it.
Author Masha Gessen has written several books, including The Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Marco.